This is day six of this November 2013 seven-day session. And we'll resume reading from the Platform Sutra of the Sixth Patriarch, one of the five or so most esteemed of the many sutras, most esteemed by the Zen sect. And we'll be reading a translation from 2007, I think, a translation by Red Pine. We left off yesterday halfway through his own story. That's how the sutra begins, actually, with him telling these thousands of monks about his own life, his enlightenment. Very briefly, he had been working, pounding rice at the monastery of the fifth patriarch, Hung Jen, and the abbot had invited anyone to present their understanding in a gatha, a verse written on the wall, and the preceptor monk, let's call him the head monk just to simplify things, the head monk had begrudgingly, with great hesitation, written his own gatha expressing his understanding. Just to review that one, the body is a Bodhi tree, the mind is like a standing mirror, always try to keep it clean, don't let it gather dust. And the abbot had seen it, and declared, if they rely on this expression, this verse, if they rely on it for their practice, they won't fall into the three unfortunate states of existence, and it will be a great help to anyone who cultivates the Dharma. The three unfortunate states of existence are the three lowest of the six realms of existence: hell, hungry ghosts, and animals. So he says, okay, if you follow that, you won't go to the bottom. And it will be help to you in your practice. Now we're picking up. The master then called his disciples together and burned incense before the gatha. When everyone saw this, they were filled with admiration. And then the fifth patriarch said, unless you all recite and understand this gatha, you won't see your nature. Anyone who relies on this for their practice won't regress. As his disciples recited it, they all did so with respect and exclaimed how wonderful it was. Remember that the text that I'm reading is the translation of the very one found in the Dunhuang Caves that dates back to the 7th century, something like that. It almost gives me the chills to know that we have such an old text that we're reading from. So this seems to be pretty laudatory, what the fifth patriarch is saying about this rather pedestrian expression of understanding. Shen Shu, the head monk, had said, keep sitting, just keep sitting, polishing the mind. So why would he praise this verse so much? Especially since later on, Wei Nung writes a verse that completely knocks it out of the park. Well, First of all, that the abbot could see that it's okay what he's saying. Keep practicing. Yes. Keep polishing the mind. Stay aware. Do daily zazen. Yeah, that's good as far as it goes. I could also see here that he wants to help Shen Shu save face. He didn't want to come up and just say, "No, this guy is a moron. He doesn't this doesn't show any kind of understanding." But also, I think we can infer here that this Shen Shu must have been quite popular among the monks. Remember that they all declined to present their own verses. That is, said, "Oh, not us. How can we stand a chance? Let him. He'll be the new abbot. Let's just let him do it." And so maybe we can also take from this that popularity is not everything. It's not enough in terms of really inheriting and preserving the Dharma. There are Zen centers now that elect an abbot every few years. That has its positive side to it. But the danger is that it becomes, yes, a popularity contest. You could have someone who's very socially skilled and well liked because of his social skills, his or her social skills, but without the real understanding. This burning incense is a note here I thought I would read. With the arrival, these are Red Pine's notes. With the arrival and spread of Buddhism in China, incense became one of China's major imports. Among the fragrances preferred during the Tang Dynasty were frankincense, myrrh, styrax, bdellium, costus, aloe wood, and of course, sandalwood. In addition to its calming influence, incense was burned to call down celestial spirits for protection and also to confer an air of sanctity on ceremonies. Here in Rochester, we've cut down quite a bit on our use of incense after hearing that it's may not be the best thing to be burning a lot of it. So we just burn just a little bit of it each day as offerings before Taisho and chanting. Okay. Things are just unfolding and according to plan so far. And now we pick up the text. Later, the fifth patriarch called Shen Shu to his room and asked, "Did you write the gatha? If you did, you're ready to receive my dharma." Shen Shu said, "I'm guilty. It's true. I was the one who wrote it. But I don't dare ask for the patriarchship, only for the master's consideration as to whether your disciple has acquired enough wisdom to understand what is truly important or not." The fifth patriarch said, "This gatha of yours shows your understanding has only reached the threshold and has not yet entered inside." So that's interesting. These seem to be contradictory. First he says, "You're ready to receive my dharma," and now he says, "It's only reached the threshold and has not entered." if ordinary people use your gata in their practice, they won't regress. But someone with such an understanding who seeks perfect enlightenment will never realize it. If you want to enter the door, you have to see your nature. Go back and think about this for a few days. Think about this for a few days and write me another gata. If you're able to enter the door and see your nature, I will give you the robe and the Dharma. Shen Shu left, but after several days, he still hadn't written anything. So he's giving him every chance here. Wants him to, maybe hoping that he'll just bear down in his practice and break through to true understanding of this and get beyond just the polishing aspect of practice, the maintenance aspect of practice. All right. Now, the scene shifts. A novice monk walked past the milling room. Remember, our hero was there in the pounding rice with that millstone around his waist. And hadn't been aware of any of this. He was so far, so out of it. A novice walked past the milling room chanting this gata, the one that Shen Shu had written. As soon as I heard it, now this is first person again, this is the sixth patriarch talking in the Platform Sutra. As soon as I heard it, I knew it was by someone who hadn't seen his nature or understood what was truly important. I asked the boy, what gata were you reciting just now? The novice said, don't you know? The abbot said, nothing is more important than life and death, and he wants to pass on his robe and his dharma. So he told his disciples to write a gata and show it to him, and he'll give his robe and dharma to whomever understands what is truly important, and that person will become the sixth patriarch. One of the senior monks, Shen Shu, wrote this formless gata along the south corridor. And the patriarch told all of his disciples to recite it, and whoever understands this gata will see their nature, and whoever uses it for their practice will achieve liberation. I replied, I've been treading this mill more than 8 months, and I've never been to the front of the patriarch's hall. Could you please lead me to the south corridor so that I can see this gata and pay my respects? I hope that by reciting it, I'll establish a karmic connection and be reborn in a Buddha land. So privately, he sees that these are not the words of a realized person, but he wants to find a way to get there to the wall. So he comes up with this, so I can, you know, offer my respects for this. And maybe someday I'll be reborn as a Buddha. It's interesting here, to consider the fact that upon hearing these words that Wei Nung could see the way forward, that he could see the opportunity to correct the limited understanding that had been written on the wall. And we say in Buddhism, hear the truth, practice it, realize it. But hear it. Hearing is a more immediate, a more direct way of receiving than anything, than reading about it. Reading can easily lead to the intellectualizing of a text, where hearing doesn't usually give us enough time to do that. We have to keep up with the talk. I think I've only heard of one case of enlightenment from reading. Someone said that the creatures in the primal sea of millennia ago developed ears long before they developed eyes. And Red Pine here points out that written language hasn't been around for more than a few thousand years, while spoken language goes back hundreds of thousands of years. Now we'll pick up again with the first-person account of Wei Nun. The novice then led me to the south corridor where I bowed before the gata. Because I was illiterate, I asked someone to read it. Once I heard it, I understood what was truly important, and I also composed a gata. I asked someone who could write to write it on the west corridor wall so that I could reveal my mind. Now, here I'd like to offer a part here from another translation that gets into a little more detail. Again, as we said yesterday, Red Pine chose this text, this translation, excuse me, he chose to translate into English this version, this Chinese version of the Platform Sutra, because it was so old. There were translations hundreds of years later in which Zen masters were lamenting that there had been so many embellishments to the original. But the later ones have a lot of good color in them and some fascinating aspects to them that have always stuck with me. Roshi Kaplow would occasionally read and comment on this sutra, and those things were just etched in my mind. And so I'd like to share some of those later translations, some of the parts of the later translations. So he gets to the wall. He has the novice monk lead him to the wall. And here's the other translation. I asked an educated man to read it, for I hoped that by hearing it I would be reborn in a Buddha assembly. A man named Chang Ji-yung, who was an aide to the governor, then read it in a loud voice. After I heard it, I said, I also have a gata, which I hope the administrative aide will write for me. The aide said, you also have a gata? Now that's really amazing. Remember, this guy, this is just a jungle rat who he's dealing with. For those who didn't hear yesterday's Teisho, where jungle rat is one of many translations for the name that the fifth patriarch called him when he first got to the monastery 8 months earlier. Other translations of that are, you're just a barbarian, or you're just a bumpkin, or a hick is even one I've read. But he made it jungle rat. So, you also have a gata? Now that's really amazing. And it gives a chance for Wei Nun to respond. Someone who wants to cultivate perfect enlightenment should not belittle someone who is just beginning. The lowest of the low might possess the highest wisdom, and the highest of the high might be in want of wisdom. When you belittle people, you incur boundless retribution. So again we see Wei Nong standing his ground, addressing someone who was like miles above him in rank. I'm still continuing with this alternate translation here. The governor's aide said, "Just recite your gatha and I'll write it for you. But if you obtain the Dharma, you have to liberate me first. Don't forget." See why I wanted to give you this other translation. So that version was the only one available until 2007 when this one came out. And then we'll pick up with again with Red Pine's translation. Wei Nong says, "Unless you know your own mind, studying the Dharma is useless. But once you know your mind and see your nature, you understand what is truly important." Now, Red Pine gives us a comment by the great Wang Po a couple centuries later about this comment. Once you know your mind and see your nature, you understand what is truly important. Wang Po said, "Your nature is seeing. Seeing is your nature. You can't use your nature to see another nature. And hearing is your nature. You can't use your nature to hear another nature." Now, in a case like that, where a later master comments like that, Wang Po would never suggest that his understanding was greater than the legendary sixth patriarch. It's just another way of looking at it. He's presenting another way of looking at it. Yes, we have this phrase, see your nature, see into your nature. But lest we get caught in that implied dualism, there's me and there's my nature, here Wang Po clears it up by saying the seeing is our nature. And now, finally, Wei Nong has his chance. So this is what he writes on the wall. "Bodhi doesn't have any trees. This mirror doesn't have a stand. Our Buddha nature is forever pure. Where do you get this dust?" And then another translation has him composing a second one. "The mind is the Bodhi tree. The body is the mirror's stand. The mirror itself is so clean, dust has no place to land." So here he's showing that he has seen into the emptiness of form. This is a truly formless gatha. This shows that even all this dust that Shen Shui had said we need to keep dusting off the mind, even the dust itself has no substance to it, much less the mirror and the stand and our body. This is the no-thingness of things. "When the disciples in the courtyard saw these gathas of mine, they were all dumbfounded. After I left and went back to the milling room, the fifth patriarch suddenly came down the corridor and also saw them. He knew I understood what was truly important, but he didn't want others to know. So he told everyone, 'This one doesn't get it either.'" Apparently he wanted to head off a riot or something some unrest that might happen, where they've got, on the one hand, the verse of this popular preceptor monk, Shen Shui, and then to have the fifth patriarch praise this one over the head monks, well, we can only wonder, but it seems like the fifth patriarch felt discretion here was called for, and there was nothing to be gained at this point in making too much of that gatha, that verse. And then here's a different translation again. This is fills out the story. This is not Red Pine's translation. The following day, the patriarch went unobserved to the milling room and saw me wearing my waste stone, milling rice. He said, "Someone who seeks the way forgets about their body for the sake of the teaching. This would seem to be true of you. But tell me, is the rice ready or not?" I answered, "The rice has been ready for a long time. It just needs to be winnowed." The patriarch then struck his staff on the ground three times and left. I understood the patriarch's meaning, and when the bell was struck three times, I entered his room. This always blew my mind that the patriarch striking his staff three times would be understood by Wei Nung to mean go to his quarters during the third watch. The third watch was 11 to 1, 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. So starting at 7 in the evening, they would have these two-hour watches, whatever that meant. So this was the third one. First, let me back up a little and comment on the difference between these two gattas. Shen Shui's gatha of polishing, keeping the mirror of mind clear of dust, and Wei Nung's gatha. There is a koan in the Shoyo Roku, the Book of Serenity, number 68, called Jashan's Wielding the Sword. A monk asked Jashan, "What if one sweeps away the dust and sees Buddha?" Jashan said, "You must wield your sword. If you do not, the fisherman dwells in a nest of reeds." The monk brought this up with Shi Shuang, asking him, "What if one sweeps away the dust and sees Buddha?" Shi Shuang said, "He has no country. Where can one meet him?" These are parallel expressions of understanding. And then the koan ends, the monk recounted this. He went back to Jashan and told him, Jashan ascended the seat and said, "In garden equipment, Shi Shuang is inferior to me, but for discourse on the deepest reality, he is 100 steps ahead of me." So then at the beginning of the third, this is the Wei Nung speaking again, at the beginning of the third watch, the fifth patriarch called me into his room and explained the Diamond Sutra to me. As soon as I heard the words, I understood. And that night, unknown to anyone, I received the Dharma as he transmitted the robe and the direct teaching to me, and I became the sixth patriarch. Here's a more detailed version of this from another translation. When Wei Nung arrived at the fifth patriarch's room in the dead of night, it said, he made a curtain of his robe so that no one would see, and he read the Diamond Sutra to me. When he reached the phrase, arouse the mind without its abiding anywhere, I suddenly realized that nothing in this world is separate from our own nature. We just pause and appreciate that line from the Diamond Sutra, arouse the mind without its abiding anywhere. This non-abiding is a rich, kind of a classic Buddhist word for the essence of Zazen. Not clinging, not getting stuck anywhere, not dwelling in thoughts, not abiding in any thought forms at all. And I said, Master, how could I have guessed that my own nature was already pure? How could I have guessed that my own nature was already beyond birth and death? How could I have guessed that my own nature was already complete? How could I have guessed that my own nature was already unshakable? And how could I have guessed that my own nature could give birth to all things? Just a side note here, the Diamond Sutra, where we read here from Red Pine, is the most popular of the 16 Prajnaparamita Sutras that make up the Maha Prajnaparamita Sutra. So we said yesterday, this is a vast compendium sutra, this collected Maha Prajnaparamita Sutra, and it includes the Diamond Sutra, the Heart Sutra. And we read here that the Diamond Sutra is the most popular of them. This phrase... from the Dunhuang Cave translation text, that he explained the Diamond Sutra to me. I don't think he explained it to him. I think he read it aloud, maybe asked some questions of Wei Nung. But it's not what happens in the privacy of the abbot's room is explaining. The fifth patriarch didn't have to explain the Diamond Sutra to Hui Nung. You are now this. This is picking up Hui Nung, and so at midnight I received the Dharma without anyone knowing. He then transmitted the direct teaching and the robe and bowl to me and said, "You are now the sixth patriarch. take good care of yourself and liberate beings everywhere and spread the teaching to the next generation. Don't let it be cut off. Back to Red Pine's translation. Then the fifth patriarch said, Wei Nung, since ancient times, the lives of those to whom this teaching has been transmitted have hung by a thread. If you stay here, someone will harm you. You must leave at once. We've often said in Taisho that these monasteries had all kinds of rough, even dissolute characters in them. You didn't have to have any real spiritual aspiration to land in a monastery, even a Zen monastery. In those days, a lot of the monks were there just because their parents had brought them there and given them up to the monastery when they were infants, or they had joined the monastery to escape paying taxes, or to escape the draft. But still, this stretches credibility. Since ancient times, the lives of those to whom this teaching has been transmitted have hung by a thread. I'd like to think it's far-fetched. So now we have Wei Nung saying, where shall I go? The fifth patriarch said, when you reach Huai, stop. And when you get to Hui, go into seclusion. These are two counties in southern China. And so at midnight I received the robe and the bowl. Then I said, I'm from the south. I'm not at all familiar with the road down this mountain or where to find the ferry. The fifth patriarch said, don't worry, I'll take you there myself. And so the patriarch saw me all the way to the Nine Rivers Ferry. Again, the Red Pines translation from the Dunhuang scroll is quite brief, and I'm going to go to this other one that fills it out more. The fifth patriarch accompanied me all the way to the Nine Rivers Ferry, where we found a small boat. He told me to climb aboard, then picked up the oar and began rowing. I said, please, master, sit down. It's only right that I should do the rowing. The fifth patriarch said, it's only right that I ferry you across. How could you possibly ferry me across? You have to get the deeper meaning here. I said, when I was deluded, the master had to ferry me across. But now that I'm awake, it's only right that I row you across the river. Although the ferrying is the same, the functions are different. The fifth patriarch said, so they are, so they are. In the future, the Buddha Dharma will flourish greatly because of you. 3 years from now, I will depart this world. Go now and do your best. Head south and don't try to teach too soon. The Buddha Dharma is hard to bring forth. Another translation gets more specific. It doesn't just say, don't try to teach too soon. He says, wait 3 years. And we have a note here from the translator that 3 years was and still is the normal period for Buddhist and Taoist monks and nuns to live in seclusion. So, for example, in Tibetan Buddhism, They do these 3-year, 3-month, 3-week retreats. And once you've done one of those, then you can be designated a lama. That's what a lama means, someone who's done one of those 3-year retreats. The retreats are nothing like the intensity of a sesshin, but they are supposedly in seclusion. Although I've heard of American lamas who just would come and go from their so-called retreat facility. And then the story picks up after these 2 to 3 years of where the now the new sixth patriarch has disappeared for 2 or 3 years. There is a thing here about what he was doing during that time. No, first it goes into the encounter between the sixth patriarch and the monk Myo, who was chasing him. Just to be really quick about this, no, I'm not going to attempt this. The time is up. We'll stop now. We'll pick it up tomorrow. We'll stop and recite the four vows.